If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56steve.com. Lower.com, equal housing lender, MLS 112-4061.
Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. I will say, since I have been doing this, not only this radio show, but talking about, in one way, shape, or form, animal welfare, this guy has been at the center of it all. Wayne Pacelli, who is a founder, the founder of the Center for a Humane Economy and Animal Wellness Action. Wayne, you have done so much in your career. Do you ever get tired?
Steve, just like you, I'm passionate about these issues. You've been an incredible voice for animal welfare, and I've done my best to try to represent their interests as well.
Well, you know, this isn't dogs or cats, but I want to bring it up because I don't think most people know that the sneakers you're putting on in the morning might be from a kangaroo hide. You know, I mean, it's something that a few years ago I had no clue about, in all honesty. So can you talk about that and what you've done, which is incredible, to make a difference?
Well, Steve, thank you for raising this issue. Even I, who've been involved 3 years, didn't realize the extent of commercial killing of kangaroos in the wild in their native habitats across Australia to supply the major global athletic shoe brands, Nike, New Balance, which are the biggest U.S. manufacturers of athletic shoes, Adidas, Puma, Japanese companies like Mizuno, Asics, and others. So in 2020, the Center for Humane Economy, one of the two groups that I lead, which focuses its work more on trying to get corporations to do better when it comes to animal welfare, so to make better supply chain decisions, rather than use kangaroos, kill them, use their skins for shoes, let's use human-made fabrics that perform beautifully and that don't, you know, come from killing animals mercilessly. So in 2020, we launched at the Center for Humane Economy the Kangaroos Are Not Shoes campaign. We said there's a better way to make shoes than to take the skins of these wild animals and trade them globally. And Steve, in May of this year, we got Adidas to stop that. It's the biggest athletic shoe brand in the world. 2 years before, we got Nike and Puma. And after we got Nike and Puma in 2023, several other companies followed, including New Balance. But then after we got Adidas, we got a cascade of other companies. So, Steve, I'm happy to report to you and your listeners that we have run the table with all of the major athletic shoe brands in the world. And over the next, you know, short period of time, they're all going to stop using kangaroo skins. Most of their other shoes are human-made fabrics or natural fabrics. So we're getting the animals out of athletic shoes. And when you think about this, you know, the big shoes that were used for kangaroos were soccer cleats, soccer shoes. That's the biggest sport in the world, right? People in 200 countries play soccer. And to cleanse that supply chain of kangaroo skins is just such an exciting moment for the cause of animal welfare.
Well, indeed. And not only are we talking about all of these adult kangaroos, and when I say all of these, I mean, I believe millions of animals being killed.
Millions, yeah.
But no one had any idea, first of all, the way in which they're killed was not the most humane method in the world. Not that that would make it any better for that kangaroo necessarily. But in addition, the joeys or the babies they had in their pouch, they were then killed or left to die. So it just was shocking to me to understand the Australian government had been allowing this all along. But what's even more incredible, sir, and I don't know how the heck, did you pick up the phone and, may I talk to the CEO at Adidas? How do you do that? I have no idea how you did that. And people all over the world literally were marching or protesting the use of these shoes. And now you have made such an incredible difference as a result, and arguably better PR for these companies.
I think so. And I did really focus on the joeys. You know, as you intimated, these are marsupials, right? They have a pouch. They put the little Joey, the baby kangaroo, in the pouch. And the way they kill them is at night, they shoot them from 100 meters or 200 meters aiming at the adults, but they have no idea how many Joeys they're going to orphan. And we highlighted this incredible collateral effect of the shooting of the adults was the killing of 300,000 to 500,000 Joeys. And Steve, just a quick word. I went to the Adidas annual board meeting near Nuremberg, Germany, and I asked to speak. They gave me the opportunity. I mean, that's what happens at the annual meeting, that shareholders present on topics. They gave me an unlimited amount of time to make my case, and then after I was done, they told me they were getting out of the business of sourcing kangaroo skins. And you couldn't, you know, keep the edges of my mouth any lower. They were way, way up high in my face. I had a big smile that we were going to protect the kangaroos.
I can't imagine. And in this country, what happened? I mean, we were doing a good job, maybe some would argue an adequate job at best, at protecting our own wildlife. And is that now going in the wrong direction?
Well, there's a big problem here in the United States, and that is our U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, less than a year ago, approved a plan to shoot 500,000 forest owls that are native to North America. They're called barred owls, B-A-R-R-E-D, not B-A-R-N owls. That's a different species of owl. And the Fish and Wildlife Service said, well, the barred owls are competing with the spotted owls, which are threatened with extinction under the Endangered Species Act. They're competing for nest sites and competing for prey. My view is that's nature. I mean, animals compete against each other. We can't put a bubble around a threatened or an endangered species. We can stop people from shooting them. We can stop people from destroying their habitat and eliminating them. But we're not going to start to say, well, because one species is competing with another, then we're going to favor one, and we're going to shoot one owl to save another. I think the whole plan is unworkable, and I'm working in Congress now. And, you know, now in the first half of August, as we're talking here, Steve, resolutions have been introduced in the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House of Representatives to nullify this program, and Animal Wellness Action, one of the groups that I lead, is going to be leading the charge to pass that resolution to nix this program so we can protect all forest owls, spotted owls and barred owls, and the rest of the incredible denizens of our remarkable forest ecosystems.
You know, like that margarine commercial I think said years ago, don't fool with Mother Nature. But there are so many examples, really, where we did, and we got it wrong. By trying to do good, we've just gotten it wrong. Letting nature play out turns out to be the right thing to do. You have a special announcement to make regarding something that you are doing to promote awareness about animal cruelty and much more. And we'll talk about that with Wayne Pacelli when we come back on WGN. There is no greater advocate, I don't believe, for companion animals, for farm animals, and for wildlife than this guy right here, the founder for a Center for a Humane Economy and Animal Wellness Action. His name is Wayne Pacelli. We've talked so many times over the years, Wayne, and you are about, and I'm happy to say, I like making announcements, about to make an announcement having to do with protection of animals and animal cruelty that you're about to embark on.
Steve, you have been talking about this for a long time. There is a correlation between malicious acts of cruelty to animals and other socially dangerous human behavior, right? That it's often the first strike for a person who's lost his or her empathy to hurt an innocent animal. And then if nobody stops that person from, you know, doing their next, you know, impulsive action, they're going to hurt people in our community. So the principle is we've got to enforce our anti-cruelty laws if we're going to make our community safer. So I've been working, Steve, and you and I have talked about this, to create an animal cruelty crime section at the U.S. Department of Justice. So we need dedicated prosecutors to take cases and interdict crimes, whether they're dogfighting operations, cockfighting operations, animal crush videos and the sale of these ghastly videos, other forms of malicious cruelty. And I'm happy to tell you, to break it on your show, Steve, that the U.S. House of Representatives has just appropriated money to create this section at the Department of Justice. Now, it's not the end of the process, but it's a huge step, and it really puts us in a position to succeed, to have a bank of maybe 10 to 20 federal prosecutors to finally take animal cruelty cases, to really dramatically step up enforcement of our national anti-cruelty laws.
Well, at a time when government is being cut, rightly or wrongly, everywhere you look, it seems, this seems amazing that the legislators, and I assume it's bipartisan as well, are actually saying, you know what, this is the right thing to do. And in fact, I could right now supply all sorts of evidence. There's a term called the link, and there is a link. It's clear. It's abundantly clear. It's been clear for decades now between crime to violent crime to animals and violent crime to humans. One often, not always, but often does lead to the other. So the fact that you're getting government to say, hey, we agree with this, and we're even going to do something about it, Wayne, that's pretty incredible.
Well, listen, Steve, thank you. But you've been talking about it, as you said, others in our field who are sociologists and other experts have documented this link between animal cruelty and human violence and other forms of criminality. And I think it really got through the legislators, right? And then we came up with a plan on how to act on that understanding about the human animal connection and the link between animal cruelty and human violence. And I think it's a great idea to have a prosecution. And frankly, we have a second idea, Steve. Now, we're not quite ready to put it into actual government action, but we want to create an FBI unit that has the policing capacity. We want FBI agents to focus on animal cruelty. And, you know, some people may instinctively say, oh, don't we have other bigger problems? The answer is no, we don't. These are all the same problems. Narcotics trafficking, murder, other forms of human criminality. If you want to stop those human crimes, stop the animal cruelty first. And that's what you and I have been preaching for many, many years. And, you know, I salute you, Steve, for helping to raise awareness on this issue all over the country. You've talked about this issue countless times. Now we're going to see some action.
Well, that's amazing. I'm curious as to what that action will look like. So one problem has been, yes, the laws exist regarding animal abuse, but then it isn't either taken seriously or not paid attention to at some level. Either the arrest isn't made in the first place. Often, though, law enforcement now, increasingly, because of public pressure, in part, is understanding also that, yes, animal crimes are serious, more than just for the animal welfare, although that's important, too. But then the charge is made, maybe a felony charge or not, but then the judges say, you know what, let's just settle that out of court or whatever, if it even lands in court in the first place, you know. So what will this actually do to make enforcement happen?
Well, you're right, Steve. There are a lot of places where the failures of enforcement can occur, right? So you need the policing side, you need the arrest. You know, locally, it's the county sheriff or it's the local police department. At the federal level, it could be the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Office of Inspector General. It could be the FBI. It could be the U.S. Marshals. It could be Homeland Security Investigations. We need those folks to act when there's a crime occurring and to investigate it, make arrests, get warrants. But then you need the second piece, the prosecutors. And then if you've got all that, then you go before a judge. And I think this is where the public comes in, right? We can't take it for granted that we're going to have successful prosecutions because we're, you know, identifying a social problem that exists, animal cruelty and the relationship to human violence. We need all those actors to be attuned to this, but it's got to start somewhere. And if we have prosecutors who are deeply committed to fighting animal cruelty and who then talk about the link between animal cruelty and human violence, and they make that case in the court, the judge is then going to be educated, and he or she is then going to act with determination and mete out penalties that are proportional to the gravity of this crime. I mean, we know that we are making our society less safe when we give a slap on the wrist to a person who exhibits malicious cruelty to animals. I mean, I don't need to tell you, Steve, but for your listeners, you know, the FBI profile of a serial killer is animal cruelty in their background, especially during childhood. We know that these school shooters, more than half of them had animal cruelty in their biography before they turned their violent instincts and their shooting skills on their classmates and their teachers. These are the most serious crimes that you can think of in our society. What's more, incendiary, and what's more of a threat than school shootings and serial killers? We know that animal cruelty is part of that. So I think this is vitally important stuff, and this is one important step that we're taking to address this problem.
And to keep track of all of this, how can people do that, Wayne Pacelli?
They can go to animalwellnessaction.org, or they can go to centerforahumaneeconomy.org. Animal Wellness Action tries to influence government, and the Center for Humane Economy tries to influence the operations of business, like those athletic shoe companies or like pharmaceutical companies that are doing testing on animals. So if you want to help influence the two big levers of change for animals to get at systemic cruelty, we invite you to join our efforts.
Yeah, and also tell your congressman how you feel about it as well. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Wayne Pacelli. Thank you so much for all of the good you are doing. I can barely keep up with it. Thank you so much. Next week, right here on Steve Dale's Pet World. Did my voice just crack? Right here. Did I sound like a teenager with a cracking voice? I don't know. Next week on this show, we are talking about the Great American Dog Show, which is coming to Chicago September 5th through 7th at Cantigi Park in Wheaton. This dog show will be unique in so many different ways, one of which is, for the first time I recall ever, you can bring your dog. Purebred dog, pedigree dog, mixed breed dog, it doesn't matter. As long as the dog is a social dog and likes other dogs and likes people, you can bring your dog to this giant park to participate in many of the special events that will be at this dog show. So, for example, your dog can learn about agility from the very best that are agility instructors at a very high level, and they can help you to teach your dog, as just one example. Another is simply walking around this beautiful park, this pathway that they have along the park. That is, again, September 5th through 7th at Cantigi Park in Wheaton. But next week on the show, we will talk about that. We'll also talk about the canine cruise. Now, are you ready? Here's a special announcement. On August 27th, the 2025 canine cruise will benefit Friends of Chicago Animal Care and Control. I mean, the First Lady has done this in the past. The people that do the canine cruise, they're on Michigan Avenue at the river on the southeast side. You know, when you go down those stairs from Michigan Avenue and you go down to the river, it's the southeast side. And they are having this fundraiser on August 27th. Now, the canine cruise began on this very radio show, and it's been happening for decades. Really, Holly Agra, who then and still owns the company, came in and we were chit-chatting about, you know, what would be a lot of fun for people. And I came up with this idea of an architecture cruise, which they do. They're the only ones that do an architecture cruise with the docents from the Chicago Architecture Foundation. And I said, wouldn't it be fun if you did an architecture cruise for dogs? And now for decades, they've been doing just that, called the Canine Cruise. But the one on August 27th will be a benefit for Chicago Friends of Animal Care and Control. And we will talk next week on the show about all those details, how you can get tickets, and all the rest. but I am so excited I will be on that cruise. I am certain Dr. Daniel Conway knows this better than anyone when it comes to misconceptions. People thinking, well, that's true, when it turns out not to be true, about our pets. Pet food is at the top of the list. And she knows that because Dr. Danielle Conway is a veterinary nutritionist. First of all, am I right about that, that there are so many myths about pet foods that increasingly, I would suggest, the general public has?
Oh, you are absolutely correct. And there are so many myths that it is getting harmful. And when I was in clinical practice, I would see these patients coming in that were sick because of the bad information that they were getting from wherever they were getting it from. So then I shifted to creating educational resources to combat those very myths.
All right. I'll talk about with you those educational resources in a few minutes. But what I really want to know about are some of those myths and ones that might be common. And you said harmful, so give me some examples.
Yeah, well, one that is just permeated everywhere is this notion that kibble is dangerous or kibble is inferior, or I've heard all sorts of variations of that particular myth. But that one is dangerous because it takes the dog or cat off of a safe, well-balanced food and pushes them towards usually whatever the company's marketing. So whether it's a fresh homemade food, you should be cooking this at home, or a raw food diet, and then they end up on a food that is not nearly as safe or well-balanced or well-researched as the food that they were on.
All right, so let's be clear about this. If I feed my pet kibble, does that mean it will be harmful in any known way, or that my pet won't live as long, that my pet is more likely to get fill in the blank, kidney disease or cancer or whatever, because of that?
That's a wonderful question. And the thing I love so much about nutrition and veterinary medicine science in general is that it's constantly evolving. And that the short answer is that kibble is perfectly healthy and it is a wonderful option for pet guardians as long as it comes from a reputable company. There is this resurgence of fresh food. And there is research coming out to show that there may be benefits behind fresh food. However, it's expensive. It's hard to do. It's hard to prepare. It can be very variable. It could be dangerous if not done well. And so from the standpoint of quality, safety, ease, you can't beat kibble. But if people want to do fresh, they can. They just have to work with an expert, a veterinary nutritionist, or get that product from a reputable company, which trying to find a reputable company can be like, oh, trying to find a needle in a haystack sometimes.
I'll chat more about that, I promise. Have you ever been to Italy?
I have not been to Italy. I would love to go to Italy.
Oh, you need to go to Italy, and you can write it all off. Here's why. Because you can say, I needed to try to eat food in Italy, particularly maybe in the countryside, and everything, more than you can imagine, I'm talking about for people, not having anything to do with dogs or cats, is fresh. It's all fresh. And you can taste the difference compared to the United States, which is something that I don't want to talk about politics, but it does seem to be, that does seem to be the case. Now, to your point, if you were to properly use all fresh ingredients, and there are a couple things. First of all, that word properly, and I want you to explain that, because dogs are not, and cats for sure, are not us. So you definitely need to prepare food for a dog or a cat. Now, how do you do that? How do you know about that? But you're getting fresh, which we don't do for ourselves, which is part of my point. For better or worse, we just don't in this country very often. So that's going to be expensive, or relatively expensive, certainly more so than kibble. So can you talk about all that?
Yes, absolutely. So with regard to the fresh, and I am a little bit of a strange nutritionist in that I have this integrative background, meaning I'm certified in acupuncture and rehabilitation. And so I have a lot of clients who've come to me on a lot of these fresh food diets and swear by them. And when they're done well, they can be wonderful. So when they're complete and balanced and they have all of the nutrients that dogs and cats not only need to survive, but thrive, then it's a wonderful option. However, if it's not made complete and balanced, if it doesn't have all of the nutrients that dogs and cats require, then it can be dangerous. And I want to point out just real quick, and I can talk about this all day, so I'll make it fast, I promise. There's a big difference between nutrients and ingredients. And pet guardians all the time confound those. They blend them together. So there's ingredients, which we, if we're in Italy, we're talking pasta, we're talking tomatoes, we're talking any olive oil, we're talking maybe chicken. And those ingredients are how a living being, whether it's you or me or our pets, get the nutrients that our bodies need to live. And so those nutrients are their macronutrients, or the big ones, like protein, fat, carbohydrates. And we also have our micronutrients, which are our vitamins and minerals. And so we need a combination of both in the right quantity and ratio, as you talked about. Dogs and cats are not humans. And so we need the right amount for their species. Cats are obligate carnivores. Dogs are, it's a debate, omnivores, preference, or carnivores, call them what you will, but they have a different nutrient requirement than you or I, or that a cat does. And so we need to factor all of that in when formulating or building the recipe for that particular animal.
How do you do that? How do you know? So let's say you have the, let's say, and you're entitled to your opinion, although our expert here, Dr. Conway, and myself may disagree. I don't think, I feed our dog kibble, but having, and some moist food, and some table food, but I keep that, oh, so here's something, since I opened my big mouth and said about table food, the magic number used to be, I think, you could do table food to not mess up the balance, somewhere like 7% approximately. Do I remember right?
Less than 10. Yep, you're right on. It's less than 10%. And you know what? I'm going to say something again, because I said I'm a weird nutritionist. And I sometimes make my colleagues nervous. And that I think you should eat some table food if you want to.
Why do you say that?
I know, weird, right?
No. Why do you?
Because I think it's really important for the human-animal bond.
Right.
And it's something that people do to provide joy, right? It brings the person joy. It brings the pet joy. And so why would I be a fun sucker and a joy killer and tell people to stop doing something that both they and their pet look forward to immensely? And I think that there's benefits not only from the, you know, emotional and psychological side of both species, but also, you know, we talk about the microbiome and what do we need to have a healthy, robust gut microbiome? If you're a human, if you're a dog, if you're a cat, variety of things that we put into our system will help us develop a robust microbiome. And the microbiome is really the key or the root foundation for every other organ system in our body. And it's the root of health. And so by feeding, But with the caveat, right, and with nutrition, it's always, it depends, and there's lots of nuances, so it's always under that 10%. So I think you should, absolutely. Pet guardians should feed some table foods, and it's very different from what was taught previously, but it should be less than 10% than what comes from their complete and balanced food.
All right, or you can do it yourself, but there's a secret to doing that, and we will reveal that secret when we come back with Dr. Danielle Conway on WGN. Dr. Danielle Conway is perhaps the only integrative veterinary nutritionist in America. We'll explain what that means. She's talked a little about how you tie in, Dr. Conway, a bit of integrative medicine into your nutritional expertise. So many people want to make their own food, and you're saying, and we're talking about, okay, it's possible, it may be more expensive, it's a lot of work, but where do you get the recipe from in the first place?
That is a great question. So the recipe really should come from a board-certified veterinary nutritionist. There's been a lot of studies, unfortunately, showing that recipes that you'll find offline, recipes that you would find even in books written by other veterinarians, they're not balanced. It was 93% of those recipes you'll find just out on the internet or circulating around have one or more major, not just minor, but major nutrient deficiency that could impact your health, your pet's health long term.
Well, let me tell a story about
that. So you
need
to get those recipes from the veterinary nutritionist.
Indeed. So let me talk about that. Years ago, before your time, there were cats getting dilated cardiomyopathy, a very serious heart disease in cats. Cats were dying as a result. If not, their quality of life was definitely impacted. One of the issues, blindness. Another issue would be heart failure, which leads to death, early demise, ultimately. So that's at that time, veterinary cardiologists were looking at, oh, this drug, that drug, let's try. And one veterinarian in particular said, you know what? I think cats are missing an amino acid that they cannot create on their own called taurine, and there's not enough of it in cat food. It turned out he was correct. And now all the cat foods all over the planet manufactured have plenty of taurine. And this kind of heart disease kind of disappeared until people began in large enough numbers to create their own diets. And now we're seeing that same heart disease, completely preventable, in cats all over again. The point I'm trying to make here is that cats and dogs are not us, cats especially. So their needs are different than us. And you tell me, but I believe by doing it incorrectly, long term, there really can be a problem for your pet.
Absolutely. And that's part of why I shifted from clinical more toward education, was there is this, that we are in a information boom era where you can find information all over the place when you're not even looking for it. The hard part is deciding if it's legitimate or if it's baloney, right? If it's BS. And it's hard to know. It's hard to know which it is. And so people are getting this information about feeding their pets, and it's not accurate. And in the clinic, we're seeing so many of these diseases that we had cured, we had eradicated. We hadn't seen, you know, nutritional DCM since the 90s, and we hadn't seen nutritional secondary hypoparathyroidism, which is a fancy name meaning that the calcium and phosphorus ratio isn't correct in the diet, and that causes them to fracture their bones. So they'll literally be walking around, and they'll fracture a bone in their leg. And I could go on and on and on. Every single organ is affected by nutrition, and there are diseases that can result from nutritional imbalances. Either it's Goldilocks, right? So it can result from too much, it can result from too little. So we really need it to be in balance. That's where that word balance comes from. And so because of all this information, and especially this myth of returning back to nature and treating dogs and cats as they should be. So feed a dog like a wolf and feed a cat like a tiger. And no, we don't want to do that. There's been advances in modern medicine and science for a reason.
If indeed we could offer mouse in a can, would that be the best thing for our cats?
You know, I joke about that, and I'm kind of serious. Like, I joke about it, but I am sort of serious in that with dogs, they have evolved from a wolf a lot more than a cat has from a tiger because of breeding, right? So we've got in there and we bred the wolf and it turned into, you know, a French bulldog and a Maltese and a Yorkie and all these breeds that look nothing like the ancestral wolf anymore. So really, even though they share a lot of genetics with them, they don't share a lot of those physiologic traits with them anymore. However, with a cat, I think, and I don't have any research studies to back this up, but I do think your house cat probably shares a lot more similarities with a lion or tiger than your dog does with a wolf. And so I joke that, you know, if I was made queen for a day and the pet food companies would listen to me, then I would make a mouse in a can diet. And there's actually a couple of companies who have this philosophy that are also doing it well and safely. But I think that would be great for most cats. Not to say that a non-mouse in a can diet would be harmful. I think a mouse in a can diet, if done well and balanced and complete, might be great for them, and they'd probably love it.
Now, we were talking about kibble earlier and how it's really not a bad thing at all. However, here's a question that is specific to cats as well. Many cats, if not most cats that are indoors only, are actually living day to day with not getting enough water, which may impact whether they have kidney disease or not, may impact whether they have kidney disease later in life, which is exceedingly common in our cats. Should we be feeding moist food? Is dry food okay? Or the best of both worlds?
You know, in a perfect world, it's the best of both worlds, right? Or it's exclusively wet. Because like you said, you know, cats are different than dogs. They're not small dogs. They're their own species. And historically, and the early research said that cats don't consume enough water. But now there's other studies that say, oh, no, they do. It just depends on what they're eating and what their situation is. And so the bottom line, though, is that kibble is not harmful. Not harmful. If we can get our cats to eat canned food or a combination, that's fantastic. But I don't want anybody listening to this to think that they're causing their cat harm by feeding kibble, because that is something that is out there and really inspires fear in the cat owner. It is not harmful. So if you get a kitten and you can get them on a variety of different foods, flavors, textures, kibble, canned, that's the best thing to do, because cats develop those texture preferences and flavor preferences really early. But if you keep switching it up on them, then they're less likely to get overly attached to one particular style of feeding or one particular brand of food. The pet food companies don't like it when I say that, but it's the truth. And getting to eat both.
That was actually, you're ahead of me. That was actually where I was going to go. So dogs, still a good idea to do. But for cats, I suggest that's really important, because at some point in their life, a cat may require a special veterinary diet, and cats get so accustomed to whatever they were doing previously for their entire life that making that change can be difficult, if not downright impossible. The theory is, if you've changed it all along, they're accustomed to change.
Exactly.
Yeah, so change it up with cats, do it gradually. Dr. Conway, how can people find you, say, on Instagram?
I am on Instagram. I am Verity Pet Nutrition, V-E-R-I-T-Y's truth. And my tagline is the truth in every bite, because I'm here to help educate both pet guardians and veterinary professionals, too, because nutrition is constantly evolving. There's constantly going companies popping up. And I'm really here to help educate both pet guardians and veterinary professionals so that our pets can receive the very best of nutrition they possibly can, at a lot of variety of budgets and within the style that makes the pet guardian feel comfortable, because it's very personal. Nutrition is very personal. It's like religion. It's like politics. And I am here to say that both any options on all the different options out there, there are options that are great. So whether they're a fresh food feeder, they're a kibble feeder, they even want to do raw, there's a way to do raw safely too, or a combination thereof. There are safe options for our pets within all of those categories.
Yeah, we didn't talk about all the categories, so maybe we'll have you back at some point to do that. Dr. Conway, thank you so much. For years, I've been talking about it, and I'm not alone. All of these major organizations, animal welfare groups, have talked about, don't leave your dog in a hot car, and why dogs do die. They die of heat stroke. The good news is now 32 states have laws that either prohibit leaving an animal in a confined vehicle under dangerous conditions or provide civil immunity, protection from being sued for breaking into a car. Illinois is not one of those states, unfortunately. But you know what will solve the problem? Don't leave your dog in a hot car in the first place. Maybe don't bring your dog with you in the first place. As much as you want to be with your dog and your dog wants to be with you, sometimes it's best to leave your dog home alone. 80 dogs have died, at least that number, this year in a hot car, according to People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Don't leave your dog in a hot car. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.